You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff like this. They're saying
something is wrong with me.
Practice.
Welcome to the new installment of Positive Cynicism. I am your host, Chad Smart. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. It's very simple. No one has found me yet. I'm like Waldo. Come on, help a brother out. Find me on Twitter. I am joined again this week by Eric Bennett. If you listened to last week's show, we discussed Star Wars up to The Last Jedi, our thoughts on The Force Awakens, and what we thought Disney was doing with the Star Wars franchise. We were both in attendance at the first screening at the Chinese Theater here in Hollywood for a very special screening. I mean, it was special in regards of there was a tribute to Carrie Fisher. We had a video presentation from Rian Johnson and a little behind-the-scenes look at the scoring of Last Jedi with John Williams. And then packed theater, opening night Star Wars is always an experience. And we even saw, you know, a cross rival, I guess you could say, with Will Wheaton showing up in his Star Trek uniform.
Very shocking.
You know, life imitates art, as he did this on an episode of Big Bang Theory, and shut up, Wesley. You're just trolling for attention. But he was very kind. I saw him talking to a lot of people. Eric, you got your photo with
him. Yeah, he was a really nice guy.
So he knew what he was doing, and I think he enjoyed the film. So now we are going to discuss our thoughts on Last Jedi, which apparently has been a very polarizing film, given the online criticisms of it. And I think our discussion today is going to be interesting because after that first screening, and Eric, you just saw the movie again for the second time.
Yeah, just last night, El Capitan.
So after the first screening, though, we went with a group of about 12 people, and I know 11 of them were like, oh my gosh, this was so great. I can't wait to see this again. I'm coming back. And I was sitting there going, well, if Eric shows it in 2 years, the week before the episode 9 comes out, I may see the movie. Mm. But other than that, I have no desire to see this movie ever again. So because people who are listening who know me might be thinking I'm just trying to be contrarian and hate on what's popular, there is a lot that I liked in Last Jedi. The second hour, I really liked. That first hour, though, was just torture. And so we're going to start off, I want to discuss all the negatives that I have with the film first, and then we'll go into the positives, because I do want to end this on a positive note, and I want to be more, you know, more positive than just critical.
Lay it on me.
So the first hour, I thought we'd gotten punked. I thought we went in to see Last Jedi, and Mel Brooks had secretly made Spaceballs 2, and that's what we were watching. Because, as I've said in my criticism of Force Awakens, the humor of Force Awakens did not, it felt forced and it felt odd for a Star Wars film. Last Jedi, the first hour, is so much comedy that, and again, I know everyone else is sitting there laughing, it just did not resonate with me. Like, so when Poe, at the start, when he's like stalling for time, and he's like, I want to talk to General Hux, and then Hux says something, and Poe's like, no, I'm still here, I'm still holding. No, I'm looking for Hux, you know, the tall guy, but that scene just felt really bad to me. And I know a lot of people, I've seen people compare it to the scene in New Hope where Han starts talking, you know, when they're trying to rescue Princess Leia, and he's like, oh, we're all good here. He's still, how are you? Yeah. But to me, that the difference is in Han's character, he's trying to talk his way out, and he can't, and then he just gets flustered and shoots the control panel. Here, Poe is just trying to be comical.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on this scene? What did you
think? I think this may be an over, like, arcing part of what we talk about, is that I don't get bothered by little things like that. I thought it was funny, but I didn't think it was a major part of the movie. So I don't focus on little things. Even if they don't work, as long as the big things are working. And I thought this movie got a lot of big things right.
Okay.
So I know there's another slapstick, jokey moment, and obviously there's going to be spoilers on this podcast.
Yeah, I guess we should say, if you haven't seen Last Jedi, you might want to stop listening now.
And yeah, because we're starting off innocent, but we're going to get really into it. The first time we see Luke Skywalker, he basically throws the lightsaber away.
Yeah, I was talking with a friend last night, and I said, I don't know what the planet that he was on is called. It's something that starts with an A.
Yeah, I can't even remember now. But, I've seen it twice.
Yeah, the movie should be called, or the planet should be Planet Knock Knock. Because everything that happens on that planet is just mostly comical. You have Luke's behavior. You have Luke milking a sea cow and drinking the milk.
Yeah.
The handmaiden aliens that take care of the place only show up for comedic relief.
Mm-hmm.
The porgs, which...
Oh, don't you dare.
The porgs, every time they're on screen, should just pop up the Amazon page where you can order their merchandise, because they are nothing more than toys.
That'd be helpful.
But they're only there to give Chewbacca something to do and to be comic relief. Yeah. Chewbacca in this movie, with the exception of towards the end when he's flying the Millennium Falcon, if you took Chewbacca out of this movie, what would you lose?
Well, he's a big part because he's piloting the Millennium Falcon. During some big sequences. Scene.
Yeah, but it's just like he's there, and even R2-D2 is like shows up and then he's gone. He shows up like and to me it felt like Chewie was, they didn't know what to do with him now that Han's dead. Like Chewbacca is the guy at the party who shows up with someone who knows everybody, but then once his friend disappears, he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, and I think he's a little bit lost in the story, but he's also lost because he doesn't have Han Solo. I don't think Chewbacca is a major part of a Star Wars story. Like, he's... I think if you add him up, he mostly grunts a couple times in these movies. And getting back to the little things, I don't think any of these things are... So, for example, the porgs, which I thought was funny and cute, they're in the movie probably less than 5 minutes total. Probably. And the Ewoks are in Return of the Jedi probably at least 30 minutes. So I think if you start weighing stuff, it might be the sum of all the little things that's bothering you. For me, it's like they're little tiny touches that don't add up to a whole lot.
See, I was kind of going the opposite, where I think the little parts or the scenes are better than the whole of the movie overall. But it's just, again, it's this first hour of the movie that just, I greatly disliked the first hour.
Mm.
And so the last point that we'll get to, which is the negative, is the subplot with Finn and this new girl, Rose, and they go to this gambling planet.
Canto Bite or Blight?
Canto Bite, something like that. Where the only two messages that I got out of this are animal cruelty is bad and rich people are evil. Which, again, for me, I like when a company that just bought another company for $50 billion and a director who's probably going to make tens of millions of dollars off of this movie, telling me that rich people are bad just irks me a little bit. It rubs me a little the wrong way. But this scene was also, I felt very unnecessary. There was nothing there. I was hoping, as it played out, not that I thought he would be the hacker that they were looking for, but I was like, oh, this would be the perfect place to put Lando Calrissian in for a cameo. Because this would be like where Lando would show up and based on what we know of him from Empire and Jedi.
Yeah, I definitely like to have seen Lando at some point. I think the scene, for me, it's not very long. Mm-hmm. The animal messaging is something new to Star Wars, which I really enjoyed, being a vegetarian.
Yeah.
They snuck it in there. I was not expecting it. I liked it. Also, too, the rich people is our bad thing is there, but it's also about war profiteering. And they're showing the mechanism behind the war, which we've never seen before. Like, we've never seen them talk specifically about them funding spaceships from both sides.
Yeah.
So the rich people aren't there just in the sense that they're bad and they're hurting animals and they're gambling. They're also funding a war, and they're profiting off of it.
Right.
Which I thought was interesting. And I like Benicio del Toro's character, which a lot of people do not like as well.
I mean, his character was fine. I had no problem with it, other than him being the Lando character of this trilogy. And there's a lot of Empire referencing or similarities to Empire in this movie, as we kind of expected with the first movie being very New Hope-ish. Again, going back to humor, when you had, I'm assuming, Warwick Davis being the little small alien who thought BB-8 was a slot machine.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I watched again. I couldn't tell if he was CGI or not.
Yeah.
It kind of looked like he was.
But maybe he could just been mo-capped.
Yeah.
So, I mean, anytime there's a small alien, you pretty much figure, in the Star Wars universe, you figure it's going to be Warwick Davis.
Also, I need to insert one more thing about that Casino Planet. There is a rumor that Rian Johnson's trilogy that was approved by Disney has something to do with the new Resistance. And there's a kid at the end of the movie that has a force power. And the kids are on the Casino Planet. So they're also showing how the Resistance can kind of prop up in unusual places. Like, that's how it starts, is them inspiring these kids, these slaves or whatever, to kind of stand up for themselves a little bit. That's another part of the casino sequence. And they're there to get the codes to shut down the homing device on the capital ship.
Right, and that's where I can see that, and we'll come back to that kid a little bit later on. But I think for a movie that is 2.5 hours long, and that whole scene on Casino Planet could have easily been cut down, and you could have changed it and had Rose be a hacker that in her town, wherever she came from, she hacked to, because she came from a poor family, and that's how she her family, you know, supported her family, whatever. I think that would have worked. Could have worked better to explain who this new person is, because it's just like, oh, hey, I'm a janitor too, or whatever her job was. So her and Finn going off for 20 minutes or whatever, and then come back. I think in the pacing of the film, that would have worked better.
I think that's the best criticism against the movie, only because I'd have to acknowledge there's a dip in the pacing of the movie when that happens. I actually enjoyed the look of the planet, the messages on the planet. I enjoyed Finn and Rose. I was having so much fun with the movie, it didn't really bother me. I thought it was a nice sidetrack to the movie. But since so many people are complaining about it, I have to acknowledge that it's slowing down the movie.
And I should point out, too, when we saw this at the Chinese theater, we were sitting, it's an IMAX screen, and we were sitting fifth row, and it was 3D. So not the normal conditions that I would go and watch a movie. So that could also play a part where a 2.5 hour movie or 2:45 with the stuff that they did at the beginning probably wore on me a little more. And you can probably tell I'm a little under the weather right now. You were
I've been sick under the weather.
So that could also affect overall feelings as well. So I just want to throw that out there to acknowledge that maybe there is, you know, feelings at play. But so once we get off of Cantor Blight, Casino Planet, once Rey got out of Planet Knock Knock and got back to the Death Star.
We got to back up one second. You didn't like any of the stuff on the island with Luke kind of losing hope and Rey pushing him to be a hero, and you thought that was slow? Like, that's in the first hour, and there's a lot of good acting by Mark Hamill there.
And I will point out this. I think the acting was a lot better in this movie than in Force Awakens. I thought everybody was on point, except for Carrie Fisher. I don't, you know, maybe it's just age, but she just sounded very mumble mouth
a lot of the time. Yeah, I noticed that.
Oh, and speaking of Carrie Fisher in the first hour, the Jedi life force saving herself from space by flying like Superman. Again, this scene, and being, you know, Monday morning quarterback, I think that scene could have worked had Kylo Ren been the one to draw her back to the ship. If we would have seen like some like that kind of a human emotion of like, oh my gosh, I just killed my mom, let me try to save her.
That would have been good.
As opposed to Leia just Superman flying back.
A lot of people aren't liking that. I thought Rian, who had been playing with the audience this whole movie, like, we thought that Leia was dead in that scene. So to see her come back anyway was kind of exciting for me as a fan. Like, I wasn't ready to let her go. Now, the way that she came back, I mean, the Jedi can kind of move particles and move objects. So for her to move herself a short distance and kind of pound on a window and get back into a ship, was it hokey? I think it was a little hokey.
I think her body movement makes it more hokey.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest CGI moment.
Yeah.
But there's something about me not wanting to let her go as a Star Wars fan. And do you think her being like alive all of a sudden, and I was like euphoric.
And I was okay with it. Think because we know in real life Carrie Fisher has since died, that it was a more emotional scene than if she were still alive and you were seeing the movie.
Yeah, that's a good point. And seeing it again last night, I was really focusing on the stuff that people were complaining about. And that scene in particular, and when I saw it, I was like, it still works for me. Her sequence about where you think she's going to die, or she is, you know, going to be dead, and then she kind of gets herself out of it, I liked it. There was a real expansion on the force powers in this movie. Mm-hmm. Another thing that people are complaining about, we'll get to later, is the holographic stuff. Mm-hmm. And kind of being at two places at the same time. I liked it. I was looking for something new, and I got it in that scene. But I get why people didn't like the imagery of it. And some people said that was like a deal breaker, mm-hmm. that scene. I just don't think that's enough of a deal breaker for me.
I think it's hokey based on her body language. More so than the actual scene.
Could have been done better.
Yeah. But yeah, the training with Rey was very reminiscent of Dagobah.
Yeah. That's why I thought you'd like it. Because
it was fine.
That was one of the best sequences in Empire.
It was fine. Again, it was very Empire-ish to me. Which, I didn't mind the Empire callbacks in this one. Maybe because I expected them more than the New Hope callbacks in Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So I was more prepared to be, I guess you say, let down by just a rehash. Although I think they did take things out of context or out of order, because I think the beginning is very much Empire, where they're trying to escape the base and the Empire is trying to block them, and then the battle at the end is very reminiscent of the Hoth battle.
It is, yeah.
But once Rey escapes and gets captured and goes to see, let's talk first about the Force visioning between Rey and Kylo Ren.
Yeah, that Snoke enabled.
Yeah. And I read something with, I think one of the editors who said, because people were complaining, or not complaining, but just, I brought up how Kylo Ren is shirtless in that scene.
Oh, it was a sexy scene. That was for the ladies.
But they said, like, that was to show that Rey could actually see him. Because she's like, oh, why can't you put on a shirt? And again, so the only way you could do that is by having him shirtless. Like, there's no, she couldn't comment on anything else
that she could see. I thought that shirtless scene was a little odd.
Yeah.
Like, being objective about it, it seemed out of place. Mm-hmm. Except, I was thinking, are they trying to show this big scar? Because they show this scar running down his face, down his body. Otherwise, it was kind of a goofy moment in the movie.
Right.
I don't think it was supposed to be funny. It was more like, I guess he was changing or something. I'm not sure what. It was a little odd.
Yeah. And I think Adam Driver and, I can't think of her name.
Daisy Ridley
have good chemistry together in mm-hmm. these characters. And so I think those scenes worked from a character standpoint. And like I said, it's something new that we haven't really seen force power wise. And I am fine. Everything that we have seen new in this movie with the force power, I have no problem with. I thought everything was done well. Except Leia floating. Which even then, again, I don't have the... It makes sense if she has the force to be able to pull herself back. Mm-hmm. Just flying like Superman, it's a little cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the force power scene, again, it added context to this character, and it's that point where you're like, okay, can she turn Kylo? Or will she be manipulated? You know, which way is this going to go?
Yeah.
And then they show up in the throne room for Snoke. And I have to say, first off, the setting of the throne room looked very cheesy to me. And I don't know if it's like a callback to
It's completely intentional. That was a callback to Japanese cinema.
Okay.
These bright red backgrounds, real stark samurai imagery, complete callback to Japanese
cinema. Yeah, it just looked like somebody forgot to do the CGI in the throne room.
Yeah. No, that was completely intentional. A lot of the choices that people don't like, I mean, obviously these weren't accidents. They were intentional, and it depends on your affinity for what they're calling back to.
But this is the point in the movie where I started getting on board. I thought the scene was well done. The killing of Snoke was very unexpected, and that fight with the Imperial Guards, I thought was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, okay, where is this going to go now? And then Kylo turns back, you know, to show that he's trying to turn Rey to the dark side.
I was wondering too, watching that a second time, if Kylo Ren was really turning, or if he's just confused and he just wants to get rid of anything in the past because he wants to remake himself. So I think when he reaches out to Rey and says, let's rule the galaxy together, kill the past, I think that was his plan all along. Did he go into the throne room wanting to kill Snoke? They directed it, or he directed it well, Rian Johnson. I wasn't exactly sure. It looked to me like he got mad when Snoke said, I allowed you guys to see into each other so that you guys would... So I would know more about Rey and all this. So he got offended or something, but it looked to me like he was going to do that at some point anyway. That whole sequence really works for me. And again, this is another thing that fans are objecting to, is that you build up Snoke, you don't give us a backstory, then you wipe him out.
Yeah.
But the whole theme in the movie is that legends and names don't matter. And I think that really, with Skywalker and with anybody can be a hero, anyone can sacrifice, anyone can make a difference. And true with Snoke, it's like, who cares who Snoke is? Ren is more powerful than him now. I really like that whole sequence. It really worked.
Well, you bring up the not knowing who Snoke is. At the same time, in this scene, I believe it was in the scene, is when Kylo tells Ren, your parents were nobody. You're nobody. You know, you're just junk trader kid who was sold for alcohol.
You know, I think after watching the second time, I don't think he says it in that scene.
Okay.
He basically says, you know who your parents are. You know, maybe he says it later in the scene. You may be right. It's maybe somewhere around there.
And so we'll jump off here real quick, because I think that's one of the points of contention with this film. And then part of it is fan hype, where there are so many fan theories of who Snoke is and who Rey is. And when the fans are wrong, then it's like, well, this is terrible because you didn't go the way I wanted you to go. Instead of being like, oh, I was surprised for a change, and you didn't go the route that I thought you were going to go.
That's what I think the big blowback is on this movie, is that people came in there expecting the doors that J.J. Abrams opened to be closed. And I think Rian Johnson came in and said, I don't care about these things. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the point of the movie, is it's about anybody can be anybody or be a hero in any moment. And it doesn't matter if she had legendary parents or not. And I think it's a very powerful message, but yeah, the audience is going to be disappointed if they expected something.
And I actually liked that Rey is a Skywalker or has no ties to anyone that we've seen, because I think it makes the point, you know, it's more like, it's like Luke was, I mean, he was the son of Anakin Skywalker, but Anakin was a nobody who was just born on a desert planet.
Yeah.
As far as we know, none of the other Jedi Council members were anybody. So Rey, and as we've seen with the kid back on Casino Planet, anybody can have the Force. Luckily, there was no talk of midichlorians in this one.
Oh,
but yes, I think having her be nobody works in the scene. Now, the problem that I have with the death of Snoke and with Rey being nobody, though, is in Rey's case, in Force Awakens, why does Luke's lightsaber call out to her? What is this? And this is something we may get in Episode 9. We just have to be patient and see. But the way that she was built up was there was some connection there. And to be kind of just dismissed. And with Snoke, again, I don't know why I should... And granted, in Empire and Jedi, you don't know who the Emperor is. You just know he's the Emperor. But I think they're... In the story being told now, like, okay, who is Snoke? How did he rise to power after the Empire fell? That's what fans want to know. And it seems like, reading up on this film after seeing it, apparently Rian Johnson was given no direction. He was just like, here's what, you get Episode 8, you can go in any way that you want, you can do whatever you want. And he's like, okay, killing off Snoke, Rey's parents are nobody. So my point now is, whereas in Episode 9, the logical conclusion to this trilogy would have been Kylo killing Snoke, redemption a la Vader and Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Now I have no idea where they're going to go, which...
I don't either.
From a curiosity standpoint, I'm curious to see what they do, but from a interested in the story being told, I've lost interest because you have nothing to bring me back. And I think for a company like Disney to be overseeing these films and to know that you're going to have three films, you would think that there should be, okay, here's what happens in episode 7, here's what happens in 8, here's what happens in 9. So you can bridge that arc between them. But this, and I think we mentioned this last week, or on the last episode, with J.J. Abrams and Lost, it seems like you just make stuff up as you go along, and then maybe try to tie it all together and make sense, or you just have a lot of empty questions.
Yeah, I think what J.J. did, and that film felt rushed. I felt like when they acquired Lucasfilm, they kind of went, I don't know what the timeline was, but I remember reading about it and going, how are they going to make a movie that fast? So to me, it seems like they threw together Force Awakens and then created a little bit of a mess or little messes. And I think Rian Johnson came in and cleaned them up. I think he said, don't worry about who our parents are. And Ren needs to be the central bad guy, so we're going to install him as a central bad guy. And it is a little strange, like every single episode they're killing off a legend, which almost seems pre-planned. But I think, in a weird way, like after this next one that's going to come out, they're kind of resetting. They're doing this thing where they're paying homage to the old ones, and then they're trying to forge new ones. It feels very disjointed at times. Like you said, I think Rian Johnson just kind of came up with his own story. But there definitely has to be continuity in the next one. So it's got to resolve whatever Rian Johnson didn't resolve in this one. But you're right, there isn't a great flow from Force Awakens to this movie. And the fans that were expecting these doors to be closed are probably very shocked at how Rian Johnson closed them. I don't think he was interested in some of the stuff that J.J. or the writer... Was it Lawrence Kasdan that wrote?
I think he wrote the first one that brought him back.
And apparently he scripted the arc of all these stories. So hopefully there will be some cohesiveness. But Force Awakens, just the more I watch it, the more stuff just kind of bothers me. And what Rian Johnson did is he kind of cleaned up those messes for me. I'm sure the audience wasn't prepared for it.
Yeah, I just, as I said, I just don't see where they go next because and that could be a good thing because if I can't predict what's going to happen, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, I think one critic I thought brought up, I think the most valid criticism of the movie is that this is kind of a finale. Mm-hmm. And when you say, I don't know where it goes next, I don't know where it goes next either. I mean, I don't know if you want to jump to the end now or wait, but sure. Like, we're left with kind of the same two protagonists against each other. There's a huge war of attrition. Now we're down to just a little bit on one side and a little bit on the other. How is that an interesting movie? Like, 30 versus 100. So, I think there has to be a third party, or that call they put out at the end of the movie for that no one answered. Mm-hmm. For the resistance to have help, I think there's going to have to be a big assembly on both sides or a regrouping because they're basically been wiped down to their lowest levels as far as resources. So Starkiller Base is gone. Laura Dern took out like their entire fleet, basically. So now we have like a scattering of walkers and some TIE fighters and assumedly some spaceships. And the resistance is on the Millennium Falcon. Like, the entire resistance is on one small ship.
Yeah.
So, when that critic said, this is a finale, where do we go from here? I don't know where we go from here. I don't know how they make that even a two-hour movie. Mm-hmm. And if it's just Rey versus Ren, is that even interesting? They've been fighting. Like, how does Ren even redeem himself?
And you look at Rey in Force Awakens, who goes toe-to-toe with Kylo, having never been trained, never holding a lightsaber.
He was very badly injured.
But now if she's been trained, and granted she only has had two of the three lessons, but she has the books of the Jedi.
Yeah, I think it was a 48-hour crash course.
Yeah.
And that's what Luke had, by the way. A lot of people were complaining. That's what Luke had.
Yeah.
In that time in Cloud City when things went wrong up there, that's how much time Luke had to get his training.
Yeah, it's just... I don't know where they're going to go because, like you said, there's... at most 30 Rebel Alliance members, and if all the ships were taken out by Laura Dern, how does the Empire or the whatever
the First Order
get off that planet?
I'm not even sure how they got down there. I'm sure there had to be some ships left. I guess that one main ship was crippled but still going. She flew through the main one. By the way, that's another fantastic sequence in the movie. Is when it goes completely quiet and white and all the ships start exploding with the hyperspace kamikaze. Another good moment in the movie.
Yeah, that was good. And it was I've seen, again, a lot of criticism about that because they're saying, like, if you go into hyperspace, you're not going to destroy a ship. And if that is so easy to do, why isn't that how they took out the dreadnought at the beginning?
Why haven't they done it before?
Yeah. And also in the beginning scene, the fact that they tried to drop bombs on the ship.
All the bombers, yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, there's no gravity in space. Those bombs would not drop.
They're guided. They're guided by the force. They're guided by propulsion. Who knows? I actually got an argument with a fan, which was very short-lived, where he said he was mad at the movie because the X-Wings didn't move with the proper physics. And I said, we're not going to have this discussion. Like, there's that level of Star Wars fan. You know, yeah. God bless him. But I consider myself a cinematic Star Wars fan and a huge one at that. I don't want to get in those discussions about whether or not an X-Wing flew the right way. Whether or not these imaginary force powers are within code, considering how ridiculous they've gotten in the video games.
Yeah. At least no one was dancing this time.
Like, yeah, it's true. It wasn't the holiday special. Yeah. I think there's so much that works. I don't know if we have time to talk about that, but there's so many scenes that work. So when I hear criticisms, they're always about the same three or four moments. Mm-hmm. But what about the Yoda sequence?
Okay, well, let me stop you right there. Okay, I have one more criticism, and then we'll get to the positive. And the criticism is, and this is, again, had I not known Rian Johnson wrote this by himself, I would have thought J.J. Abrams or Damon Lindelof had written this, because the Rebel Alliance suffered from lostitis, which is everything could have been avoided if people talked to each other.
Mm.
Why didn't Laura Dern tell Poe, hey, here's my plan. We're going to put all the fuel over to the escape pods. There's a planet down below, which is an abandoned Rebel base, and that our plan is to sneak down there while the Empire is bombing our giant ship. Instead of just being like, get off my bridge, and Poe being like, I'm Poe Dameron and I'm going to go do some crazy plot.
Well, I think it has something to do with, I know this is going to sound like I'm making stuff up, but I think it has something to do with military rank, where the leadership kind of needs to know, and you don't need to know.
And I think she points that out.
Like, I don't think Poe is supposed to be the one who's second in charge hearing all the plans. And there's also something about panicking, and then they reference, or Rose references, that people are escaping from escape pods. Mm-hmm. Like, there's actually people that are traitors or cowards.
Yeah.
So I think for Poe to kind of know what's going on, he's already inciting mutinies or inciting counter-thought. I don't think Laura Dern thinks, like, I don't need to tell this guy what we're doing. Like, just do what you're told. I really like Laura Dern's character in that, by the way, because it had me... I was rooting for Poe to defy her, and then you realize that she had the best plan all along, and she makes the biggest sacrifice. Yes.
And Poe is basically responsible for the destruction of the entire Rebel Alliance.
At least all the bombers.
Yeah. Yeah. All of his actions lead to people.
Yeah, he tells the bombers, let's do this, and all the bombers get picked off.
Yeah.
Except for one.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you have a valid point in military strategy, but, again, it could have just been very easy. For the amount of people that were there, you know, it's not like a huge group. I think she could have explained things. Yeah, it's strange.
Like, they have trackers.
Yeah.
Like, Leia has a tracker, and Rey has a tracker, and it's like, you just wish they could pick up a phone and say, well, we're in trouble. It's, you know.
Yeah.
But they're always kind of like off doing their own thing. They're not communicating.
And real quick, this is just an observation, not really a nitpick, but am I correct in remembering that there are only about 4 or 5 different aliens in the Rebel Alliance? Like, yeah. It seemed like all the aliens were on the rich planet, and you don't really see a lot of aliens in these movies anymore.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that. Like, when they showed the salt planet and they showed the ships that were kind of towing on the salt planet, there was like one alien in that group.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised. Like, they kind of said, screw the aliens, we're just going to have like a cast of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely could have been more exotic there for sure. Like, the Crystal Foxes were great. I didn't feel like they got enough screen time, actually. A little indifferent on the horse. I don't know what they're called. Falthiers, or I don't know what they're called, but they didn't look completely great. Could have been a little bit more aliens in this, for sure.
Okay. Anyway, now let's skip to the positives. And we've already discussed the throne room scene was a positive.
So, I think I don't know if I said this on this podcast, but I'm a kind of the sum of the parts guy. Uh-huh. So, if a director creates these indelible moments that work, to me, I can overlook a lot. Because a lot of times you watch a movie and you're like, eh, I was there for 2 hours. There wasn't even that one moment that paid off. There are huge payoff moments in this movie. We talked about the throne room with Snoke. That whole fight with the samurai guards, the Praetorian guards, whatever it was, absolutely fantastic. When they're fighting back-to-back, Rey and Ren, the whole Yoda thing like made the hair stand up on my arms. The whole message behind what he was saying, which is like, forget the books, forget the library. I'm going to summon lightning and I'm going to blow them up because we can pass on knowledge. Rey knows as much as she needs to know. It's not in the books. These books aren't page turners anyway.
Now, did you know Yoda was in this movie?
No.
Okay.
I heard a rumor that he might be a Force ghost, but then I dismissed that with all the other rumors. My favorite character is Yoda. So him in that movie, that whole thing works. Super exciting. And Mark Hamill's performance is incredible. And it's throughout the whole film, including the last 40 minutes of the film, which is the whole last 40 minutes of the film is just incredible. And him showing up as a younger version, holographically projecting himself as a hero, sacrificing himself for his sister and the troops. And that's all that stuff is at the end of the movie, but it's a long chunk of the movie. It's like 40, 45 minutes. And this stuff, when it works and when it happens, it really, really works. Like, this is all-time Star Wars scenes for me. It belongs up there with the best scenes in any of the movies, from my point of view. And I would have to point again to the Yoda sequence and the whole face-off on the salt planet.
Yeah, I thought the Yoda cameo was well done. And I, you know, that's one of the points where I was like, it took me back to being a kid because it's like, oh my gosh, it's Yoda. I didn't know he was going to be there.
It's puppet Yoda. It's not CGI Yoda. Yes,
it didn't look like prequel Yoda.
No, this was puppet Yoda.
Was it puppet Yoda?
The long shot of his body was CGI. And it was definitely Frank Oz voicing it because he's credited in the movie. And then when they zoom in on him, it's clearly a puppet.
Nice.
And if it's a CGI puppet, it's a great one.
So I thought it was Yoda from Empire.
Like, yeah.
He had that personality. It was great.
Sense of humor.
Apparently, this shows my Star Wars nerddom isn't, I guess, not that great. I did not realize that Luke had a different colored lightsaber at the end than his normal.
Yeah, I think it was green.
Yeah. I just noticed that his beard was not gray.
He was younger.
Yeah, so that confused me a little bit.
He was projecting a younger version of himself that Kylo Ren.
I think that scene worked. I mean, if I want to get nitpicky, I can probably find reasons to complain about being a hologram as opposed to actually Luke being there.
Yeah.
But I think it worked. I think the death of Luke works in the context of this story. I know that's another contention that fans are outraged about. And I have no problem with it.
Oh, it's a great death. It's
other than, yes, if you look at it, you know, now they've killed Han, they've killed Luke. Obviously, Leia's going to be dead in the next one. So, yes, this is, as you kind of pointed to earlier, this is kind of like resetting.
Yep.
And I would even say in 9, do we need Chewbacca, C-3PO, R2-D2? Or are they just, you know, extraneous characters that would just be there to pay fan service to keeping them in?
Yeah, and it's, I think that's what a lot of old fans are having a problem with, and I get it on a certain level, but look, these movies came out 40 years ago. And it kind of makes sense that with 4 decades going by that we would have a new droid in BB-8, we would have new heroes, you know, bad Jedis, good Jedis, whatever. I'm not sure what the resistance is, no pun intended, to having new characters. You may not like them as much. I certainly don't think that Rey is Carrie Fisher's equal and Finn is you know, Harrison Ford's equal. I know that's not a direct comparison, but I love that we're getting into a new series. And I think once we get past 9, Rian Johnson is his new trilogy, and these standalones hopefully fill it in. Maybe the old fans leave. They're saying, check, please, like with the Star Trek fans. They're like, I don't want to see new versions of this.
Well, and that takes me back to a point of the conversation that I had the night before we recorded this with my friend Sweeney, and then my friend Stan, who was on 2 episodes ago talking Star Wars fandom in general, and who had seen Last Jedi before you and I had seen it. Both of them saw it with their kids, who both, I believe, are around 12 years old. And this, and one of the things is that they both mentioned was watching my son watch the movie took me back to watching it. And I could see it through their eyes, like them getting excited through things. And it made me stop and pause and kind of reflect on that moment. And I remember I brought up the comparison of a few years ago, you and I went and saw WWE Monday Night Raw in Anaheim.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're sitting on the floor, and I was sitting there as the critical wrestling fan that I am, being like, oh, this storyline is stupid. What is this? This is dumb. And then there's about an 8-year-old kid in front of us, a couple rows up, who every time someone's music hit, he would jump out in the aisle, and he'd be dancing, he'd be doing all the mannerisms and everything. And I'm like, man, I wish I could see this through his eyes, because he's having a great time, and I'm just being miserable. And why, you know, why does it matter if I'm miserable when everyone else enjoys it?
Yeah, and that's what's kind of disheartening about this new film, is it appears like, I don't know what kids think about this movie, but I hope they enjoy it. But a lot of old fans are really whining about it.
Well, and even to my point earlier about how the humor, I don't like the humor in this movie, because to me, my Star Wars, the original, had humorous moments, but they were spread out and they were there for levity. Whereas this is more humor, which it's an entire different saga. It's a different time. It's a different era.
Yeah, everything's so different about this.
It could work, again, for the audience that is growing up on it now, probably love the porgs and love milking cows, sea cows, and whatever. It's just, but for me, it doesn't work. But I'm one of millions who are watching this movie. And unfortunately, with the way that Hollywood is right now, is you go for the biggest audience.
So see, I have to disagree on one point. I think that this film will obviously do less than Force Awakens because there's some fan blowback and because it's not the first Star Wars in forever. Yeah. But I think the movie is getting a lot of criticism for taking some chances and doing some stuff that audiences didn't expect. And I think that's the whole point of making movies, is to kind of take a risk here and there. Force Awakens played it very straight, very safe. So I get subjectively why people don't, you don't care for the movie, you don't think it's great. And I totally respect that people may not be into the movie. However, I find it refreshing that he came up with something different. And if the complaint can't be on Force Awakens that they're playing it too safe, and the complaint on this is that he took chances and I don't like them, then it seems to me like you can't please the fans.
Right. And now with J.J. Abrams coming back for Episode 9,
yeah,
and the fact that he just turned in the story 2 weeks ago on December 15th, do you think because of fan criticism to Last Jedi that he's going to pull it back and be more safe playing and be like, okay, let me see what I can do to end this trilogy on a more standard Star Wars note? Or is he going to be like, no, we have this story, we're going to go outside the box?
I thought about that, because really they've taken all the chances they can take. Like, if you get rid of Han Solo in a way that was not well done, that was so controversial, and I'm still not sure why people aren't more mad about that. Like, Luke's death was amazing compared to Han Solo's death. But what chances can they take in this next one? I mean, it looks to me like it'll play out pretty conventionally. The whole thing about Star Wars, though, overall, is that I think older fans like us, we're holding on to very old memories and nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And the people I know that really hate this movie, they're old guys like me. And in fact, one guy that I ran into in the parking lot at work said that he felt like the movie had raped him in every orifice of his childhood. And I literally had to stop and say, you got to be kidding me. Like, nostalgia is a wonderful thing because it makes you feel good every time you hear the sounds and you hear the lightsaber and you read the crawl. But also, it can be a trap because it locks you into what you think. This is my Star Wars. It's not your Star Wars. It's everybody's Star Wars. In fact, it's really Disney Star Wars. You can totally dislike what they're doing with it, but shouldn't they be allowed to do what they want to do with the characters? If they want to kill somebody off, they can kill somebody off. If they want to create a space penguin, they can create a space penguin. Now, I think the best comparison I can make with this new Star Wars, now that I think about it overnight from seeing it last night, is I think it's more of like a Guardians of the Galaxy Star Wars, which is like a lot of spectacle, a lot of knee-slapping jokes and slapstick humor, and it's basically trying to make the audience feel good all the time. Now, I think that's taken people aback because Star Wars has typically been not this jokey. Mm-hmm. And again, it's messing around with old legacy characters, and I don't think people like that either. So I'll be really curious to see what the box office is in this movie by the end of the year.
I mean, it's doing well. I expect it to be probably the number two film of the year by the time next week ends. But like you said, I mean, yes, it's going to make less than Force Awakens just because it's a sequel, and sequels, unless you have a breakout sleeper hit that spawns a sequel doesn't do as well as the original.
Yeah.
I'm curious what the next film will do, what that box office will be.
Han Solo?
Not Han Solo, Episode 9.
Yeah.
Given the criticism of this movie, and I've said, while I didn't like Episode 8, am I going to be there for Episode 9? Yes, because I'm a Star Wars fan. I've seen the other 9 films in the theater. I'm going to keep that streak going. Am I going to be more cautious about the movie going into it? Maybe.
Yeah.
But overall, I think, as you said, it's Disney. It's not... I would be curious now to see what George Lucas's original treatment was for this trilogy, because apparently he did turn in a story idea, and Disney was like, no thanks, we don't need this.
I read an article that he wrote a story about Luke Skywalker training a young apprentice on an island with a Jedi temple. Hmm. And then they showed the Jedi temple in a concept drawing. It was like a really ornate, metallic... like, not a sphere, but almost like a mosque. And I was like, oh, this is kind of like what they did in Last Jedi. So maybe they took one of his ideas. I don't know.
Maybe. But yeah, overall, I have said this movie to me, and I may have said this earlier, I can't remember, is like The Dark Knight, where there are a lot of scenes that are really good, but as a complete whole, I don't think the film works for me. But again, the second half of the movie I really liked. I thought it was well done. I just don't know, as we've said many times in this podcast, I don't know where they go from here.
I don't either.
And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I think this is all good, because whether or not you're blown away by these movies or not, we don't know where they're going. They're giving us some familiar themes and some new stuff. And just for a chance to see Luke and Leia together again, I think, how could you not recommend this movie based on Mark Hamill's performance? How could you not recommend this movie based on seeing Leia one more time? You know, obviously, Carrie Fisher's passed. I just don't know. I still don't understand how people are so down based on those two things. Like, any Star Wars fan should be here and at least see this one more time. Mm-hmm. See them one more time.
That's a good point. Yeah, I thought Mark Hamill did a great job. I wish, and I think that's another complaint that fans have with these movies, is we never got Han, Luke, and Leia together.
Yeah, that's a little disappointing. We got holographic Luke saying goodbye to Leia in a really another fantastic scene where Leia jokes about her hair, and he brings the dice off the Millennium Falcon from Han Solo. Watching that scene again for the second time, it's an awesome scene. Would have been nice if he was physically there. Mm-hmm. And it kind of sucks that the heroes are kind of dying on their own, not surrounded by other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I again, it's Star Wars. I mean, it's critic proof. I think people are going to, even if people hate it, again, I think everyone who is hating it now will be there for episode 9. And then they'll complain about it again, because that's what the internet does. Looking forward, though, you just brought up, I believe next year is the Han Solo movie. I am still not on board with these. I don't mind a non-trilogy story Star Wars movie. I just don't think the ones that they've announced, Rogue One, Han Solo, possible Obi-Wan, Yoda movies.
Yeah.
I don't need to see these characters as younger versions of themselves. I would rather see extraneous characters or new characters introduced into this universe and new stories. But that's my take.
Yeah, I think the Han Solo one runs the biggest risk of being... I don't think any of the new Star Wars movies have been... I know people can disagree with this. Have been awful or dreadful. I think they've been average to average good to... I think Last Jedi is great. I think it's the first great Disney movie that is in the Star Wars vein. The Han Solo one runs a serious risk, I think, because of all the problems. And because you're doing a young take on Han Solo. Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford is so iconic. There's so many ways that can go wrong. I just don't see how it goes right. Now, as far as Obi-Wan goes, Sir Alec Guinness wasn't in the movie very much. Mm-hmm. And I like Ewan McGregor's take on Obi-Wan a lot. So I would love to see that filled in. Yoda stuff sounds silly. Even a Boba Fett movie sounds kind of weird. Han Solo, though, they're really risking a lot making that movie. And firing the directors right before it was done. And Ron Howard having to clean that mess up. And we don't even have a trailer. This movie's supposed to be out in April or May. And Disney would have been piling trailers. There should have been a trailer for this at The Last Jedi. With that many eyeballs. So... little concerned. I think that date's going to push back. I think they're going to push it back till December.
Okay.
Just to let this fan reaction cool off in this movie.
Yeah, I didn't know when the movie was coming out. I assumed December of last year, or next year, just because I figure all Star Wars.
No, I think it was like Rogue One. It was like a May or April. Whereas the trilogy movies come out in December, and the standalones, I think, come out...
I thought Rogue One came out in December.
Oh, yeah, maybe it did.
Yeah.
I thought this Han Solo movie was supposed to come out in April, though.
I don't know. I just, given my distaste of the humor in the Star Wars films and knowing that the original directors got fired because it was too humorous, I'm guessing Han and Lando must have been like a Laurel and Hardy type slapstick comedy, because...
it's like a Dumb and Dumber thing?
Yeah, because if...
lots of jokes?
Lots of jokes, if that's...
Well, when I heard the Lego guys were doing it, I was really worried. So I'm actually more encouraged.
And I mean, I've enjoyed Ron Howard's films, but I don't think he's a director that I would, based on his last 10 years of performance, he's not someone that, I think you're going to get a lot of safe, a lot of just paint by numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But I know you'll be there.
I will probably be there.
And then I'll be there.
And then I'll come back on this podcast and complain about it some more.
Let's do it. Because
I don't complain on Twitter. I don't complain on message boards. I guess I did say that I miss the subtlety of Jar Jar Binks on Twitter. But that's my only complaint publicly. I think Star Wars is... to repeat myself, Star Wars is what got me into the entertainment industry. It was the first movie I saw. What I based a lot of my life around... But I know over the last 15 years, my fandom has dwindled. And it's nice seeing these movies and seeing a continuation of the story. I just have to realize that it's not my Star Wars and everyone else. And again, I think for the target demographic, these movies are hitting all the right notes.
Yeah, I think you can't fake your fandom.
Yeah.
So I went this movie wanting to love it. I want The Force Awakens, why I love it. I came out of Force Awakens confused. And like, what the hell was that? I ended up liking it the more times I saw it. I picked out the good stuff and ignored some of the bad stuff. The Last Jedi, I just went in there and I was like, oh, I'm liking what he's doing here. I'm liking all the chances. So you either feel it or you don't feel it. And my only worry with you is that you're losing your fandom for Star Wars. And I'm hoping they can get you on track with the movie that you identify with. I would have thought this would have been it, but if you're not feeling it, you're not feeling it.
Well, you know, you've been on the show before to discuss fandom. I think I'm losing my fandom in general for a lot of things, and it's interesting. I was, before you came over today, I was watching a documentary on Amazon, called Marking Out. It was about guys who do a wrestling podcast and documentary about them, and they go to Lexington, Kentucky Comic Con, and one of the guys is just like, I don't belong here. I don't care enough about anything the way these people do. And that's the way I've talked with you about Comic-Con. It's, I like things, but I don't love things anymore.
But that's I don't know what that's about, because I think as a kid, I only had it for Star Wars and Marvel. Mm-hmm. And then it obviously went away for a while with Star Wars and Marvel. They weren't making movies because the technology wasn't there. And then all of a sudden, this fan culture kind of hit 10 years ago. And Star Wars came back, and Marvel's been showing up in force. And now I feel like a kid again, because I'm seeing everything visualized that I loved growing up. And it's, you know, it's much better looking now with the stuff that's coming out. So my fandom has been kind of resuscitated. And now I'm collecting again, and I'm buying. I have a Joker graphic novel coming today. I kind of found it again, which is really interesting, because I lost it too. But I guess it was always there. And maybe you just kind of slowly lost it, and maybe it doesn't come back, and you have to find something new to get passionate about. And maybe Star Wars has run its course for you.
Maybe. And that will be 2018, the quest for something.
Passion.
The passion. The passion of the chat.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go from there. Anyway, Eric, thanks again for coming on to discuss Last Jedi. I think we had a decent conversation and pointed out some good points, I hope. Hopefully people at home liked it. If you give us your thoughts on our thoughts. Again, you can hit me up on Twitter, at Chad Smart, Facebook, Positive Cynicism. Let us know, are you excited about Episode 9? Do you care about Han Solo? But whatever you do, just remember to do something positive with your life.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.